Welcome to the Flash F1 podcast with Gil, Mark, and our special guest.
Welcome back, listeners, to a Flash F1 special edition podcast with Gil and Mark. This special edition podcast, we bring in a special guest. Mark, do you want to take it away and introduce our guest?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll keep this short. But Gil and I had the immense opportunity this morning to have a conversation with Tim Haraney. Tim is one of the premier motorsports and Formula One analysts in Canada. He works for TSN, which is the country's premier sports television network. TSN's very similar to ESPN for our American listeners. In fact, ESPN owns a 20% stake of the network. But it's particularly important to us because TSN carries Formula One calendar in Canada. So that's the network that we tune into to watch free practice and to watch qualifying and, of course, the races. And Tim provides some amazing analysis and commentary. He's also hosts his own podcast. He has a fantastic Twitter feed, and he produces a lot of great Canadian-centric Formula One content, which ultimately is exactly what we're trying to do, and I think what we're all able to bond over a little bit.
If you're wondering why we're giving you this special podcast, we're doing this special podcast with TSN Tim in lieu of our normal Flash F1 Fast Pass. So if you're wondering why there's no Fast Pass in the upcoming week, it's because we're giving you this special episode.
I think you'll enjoy it. Again, we want your feedback. So if you have any, please hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on Instagram. Please smash that subscribe button. We want your feedback and we want to hear what you like and don't like. And hopefully this interview is something that you'll find quite interesting. Okay, we're going to flash to it right now. Cut to the break.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Search for Flash F1 Official.
All right, listeners, as promised, we have an incredibly exciting guest joining us today. The motorsports, the Formula One analyst for TSN, the Canadian equivalent of ESPN, is joining us. And for those of you listening outside of Canada, TSN is Canada's principal national sports television station, but more importantly, it's also the television station in Canada that broadcasts the Formula One Championship, so practice, qualifying, the race. Tim plays an absolutely critical role at TSN because he's the on-air personality that speaks to motorsports. He provides analysis, he provides insight, and he's had the great fortune over the years of being able to interview a lot of the drivers, which of course have been broadcast on TSN itself. So incredibly excited, Tim. Thank you very, very much for joining us this morning. Maybe give our listeners a bit of a background who maybe aren't as familiar with you as we are.
All right. Yeah. First, thanks for having me on, guys. Really appreciate it. Big fan of the podcast. It's really good. Yeah. For myself, I started racing when I was 9 years old. Go-karts, all that kind of stuff. Raced dirt bike, four-wheelers, and built my own go-karts with my dad and my uncle. And yeah, we would go racing and stuff like that. And then I was a mechanic when I was 16, and I worked for a racing school. I got talent spotted and jumped into a Formula Ford team and just made my way up the racing ladder, really. Formula Ford, went from there. Formula 1600 Canadian Pro Championship, Rookie of the Year honors. And then from there, jumped into Formula Renault, which raced against people globally. Then from there, Champ Car Atlantics. Then went to Europe and raced in the FIA GT Championship and came back, did some more Atlantics, and that's pretty much it.
That's an absolutely incredible journey. But how then did you make the transition from an actual real-world racer racing in some of the most competitive series on Earth to being a TV personality at a channel like TSN?
Yeah, so that's a pretty long story. So when my sponsor at the time, because I had quite a few. My main sponsor sold their company, and we didn't have any more money to go and race. So I started delivering pizza in Peterborough. I was a pizza delivery guy. And
the pizzas must have gotten there really fast.
Yeah, I get that one a lot. Yeah, so I did that, and I worked at a chicken farm, basically cleaning chickens and getting them ready for consumption and for customers and things like that. And I was delivering pizza, and I ran into Dan O'Toole.
Oh, wow.
Who, yeah, works at TSN. Yep. And Dan and I have a relationship before that because our fathers are actually... we're good friends. And he was asking me what I was up to. I had explained, you know, what had happened. And he was just like, why are you delivering pizza? And I kind of didn't really know why I was delivering pizza. All I knew is I needed a job.
Yeah.
And wow. The pizza delivery place was nice enough to give me a job so I could keep my head above water. Yeah. Dan just suggested, why don't you just come to TSN and work for us? And I thought, well, Dan, I don't really know much about sports and sports broadcasting, and he pretty much just said, well, we'll teach you. And I said, okay. And he had mentioned there was a course in Toronto that I could take that would kind of help me. It was like a DeVry almost, learning broadcasting, and it was about, wow. It was a year-long course, and so I jumped into that. And then I transferred from the Score over to the TSN. And when I was working at TSN, I was kind of producing highlights, learning how to create content, learning how to write for television. And then I noticed, you know, they had Formula One rights. And I thought, well, no one's really doing much with these. I figured that maybe, you know, hey, maybe I could do something with this. And TSN was cool enough to give me a position working with Formula One. And then I kind, wow, of worked my way up the ladder at TSN in the same way I kind of did with racing. And, you know, TSN was nice enough to give me an opportunity and let me, you know, let me follow through with, you know, what my goal and my objective was to kind of grow racing in Canada. And they understood, and they were cool with it, and they knew my background. And, you know, Dan was obviously big in helping my career move along at TSN. Yeah, you know, I've been very fortunate over the last, I would say, 6 years to work there. Wow. and to learn. And for the past 4 years, I've been on TV doing stuff for racing, IndyCar, Formula One, doing a bit of NASCAR, signed some stuff with Nissan to do some commercials for them, which was really cool. That was a ton of fun. And so, yeah, it's been a really cool ride, in all honesty. It's been a lot of work. Work.
Wow, that's a very wide spectrum into your background. Very interesting in how you got into being a sportscaster. So that's really awesome. Going from racing to delivering pizzas, chickens, to now just, you know, talking about Formula One, your passion, to everybody in Canada.
Maybe a quick question. One of the things I think I find so interesting about your work as an analyst is obviously you do some podcast work, you do a lot of on-air. What's the most exciting or most interesting interview you've done so far in the world of Formula One?
Oh boy. Okay. I've done a lot. I'm just trying to think, because like I've had some really cool interviews. I mean, you guys know who Brian Tyler is?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so for those people who don't know who Brian Tyler is, he is a musical composer. He does all of the music for the Avengers movies. He does the music for the Iron Man movies, Thor, Fast and the Furious franchise, Crazy Rich Asians. He's working on the new Swamp Thing TV show right now, and he's a huge F1 fan, and he's the guy who did the score for the Formula One opening. So the opening theme song you hear whenever Formula One starts, he did that.
Yeah, I've seen I've seen him on YouTube. He's the one conducting the orchestra. And is it also currently this year and last year's opening for F1?
Yeah, this was part of the Liberty rebrand, I believe.
Yeah, so he was brought in to do that. So he started. Awesome. Yeah, so he did all that in 2017 or 2018. I can't remember which one. Oh, it's 2018. Was the very first year for it, for the theme song. And he's the one who scored it. Anyway, so he's a very big racing fan. And I reached out to his PR team, and they were like, yeah, he's down. So here's what you got to do. here's this address. And I was in LA at the time. I do go down to LA quite a bit. So I was down in LA this one time and he invited me over to his house. Wow. So I was like, oh, okay. So went to this really, he has a sick house, guys. It is dope. So wow. he lives up in the hills of like Beverly Hills, right? So it overlooks all of like Hollywood and LA. It's an absolute gorgeous, gorgeous house. And he lives right beside Justin Timberlake. So Timberlake is like this guy's neighbor, right?
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, so I roll up in this place in this, you know, junk box of a car. And I look in and there's this huge glass casing and it's filled with like Ferraris,
wow.
Mercedes, yeah, BMW, any high-end sports car. It was in this thing and it was so cool. I was like, kind of had to like pinch yourself, you know? So got to meet him, sit down, and we did an interview, and he was super cool, really nice guy, and that was probably one of the coolest interviews I've ever done.
That's wow. Awesome.
That's great.
Yeah.
I was expecting maybe a Claire Williams or a Lance Stroll, but that's incredibly, incredibly interesting. And you say that this guy's deeply invested in the sport too, which makes that much cooler. That's
yeah,
awesome.
Very much so. For podcasts and stuff, I'm like telephone interviews are good, but like one-on-one sit down face-to-face, those are the best because you can't hide facial expression.
Yeah, body language, you know, emotion. Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah. So as we get started with this 2019 season, Mark and I on Flash F1, we talk about the race, the drivers, you know, all the teams. And specifically, we point out, and we've been talking the last few episodes about Ferrari. And we kind of wanted to get your take on Ferrari, Mattia Binotto's, you know, the team principal, his instruction, the team orders, and also, you know, talk to us about your opinion, your insight on Charles Leclerc and how you think he's going to fare out.
Well, I mean, Ferrari's in a really tough spot right now. I think a lot of their problems stem from their front wing. And for those people who don't understand, basically the front wing is the first thing to punch a hole through the air. And tires are the first things and the only things that really touch the ground. So tires in Formula One play a crucial role in getting pace out of the cars. I mean, the engines now, everybody is pretty close to equal on power. I mean, Ferrari, Mercedes, I feel are pretty equal with power. And Honda is starting to catch up, and then Renault is still having issues with their power units. But a big part of this is trying to generate heat into the tire itself. And the front wing is the first thing that touches the air. It's the first thing to punch a hole through the air. So if the front wing is not working dynamically in the way that they want it to, then the way the air gets distributed over the car doesn't really work in terms of forcing the vehicle into the ground, forcing the tires into the ground, and generating the heat that's required. So when the front wing gets designed and developed a little differently, if you look at Mercedes, their front wing looks a lot different from Ferrari's front wing. So
yeah,
they've really focused.
We've touched on this on a few episodes where Ferrari's taken a totally drastic or 180 degree design from everybody else at the start of the season.
I didn't realize though, and it makes sense because so much of our conversation this year about Ferrari struggles have been more about kind of team orders and strategy, but I'd never really considered it. And you're right, the impact that front wing is having on the car's ability to gain traction and speed. So you believe, and I think there's probably a lot of analysts that agree, that one of their biggest struggles starts at the front of the car then.
I think part of it starts there for sure. And then obviously the way that the air kind of spreads over the car at that point is now different. So once you start changing the front of the wing, you have to reconsider everything else you're doing in the middle of the car and then also at the rear of the car because you need it to be compliant. I think they've got a lot of work to do in terms of their aero design to catch up. I think they can catch up. I don't think they're that far off. I think once they get things dialed in, we're going to see them back towards the front of the field. It kind of feels like to me, for the start of the season, they decided to try and go a straight line speed over cornering speed, where Mercedes was like, "Heck no, we're going to go with cornering speed, and that's where we're going to leave everything." And you know, we're not going to worry too much about straight line speed because you can also make up time in the corners as well. So I think that's that's what's Mercedes. That's what their game plan has been, and it's worked for them so far. In terms of strategy with Ferrari, yeah, it's been a disaster, and that definitely needs to be worked on and rectified for sure. I really feel that this number one, number two stuff has got to go, because that just doesn't work with these two drivers.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just not working. You know, you have to let them race. I mean, they're racing drivers, and at the end of the day, if one's faster than the other, just let them race.
Great example, kind of like with Mercedes, with how Bottas and Hamilton are working together at the start of the season.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the things with Mercedes is, you know, they're going to let these two guys, you know, race each other, but obviously keep it within limits. You know, no touching, no brake checks, nothing dirty, obviously. So to keep it as clean as possible. And sometimes it's really hard to do that with when you have two very competitive drivers, but at the end of the day, you want to keep two cars in the race and you want to win a Constructors' Championship as well.
We will be back in a flash. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Search for Flash F1 Official.
What do you think the challenge is within Ferrari at this point, just in terms of that team orders piece? Because you're absolutely right. And I think that's one of the things as viewers that Gil and I get frustrated with, is the fact that we see that in any given race, one driver might be faster than the other, but the team's ultimately holding them back. Do you get the sense that maybe Mattia Binotto, maybe new in his role, is trying not to hurt feelings or upset Vettel, or that maybe promises were made to one of the two drivers about what their position would be in the team? Because I think, again, as viewers this year, it's been really evident a lot of times that Leclerc has better pace, but he's just not been given that opportunity to race like maybe a Hamilton would if he was behind a Bottas.
Yeah, Leclerc's also been his own worst enemy at times as well.
True.
Remember,
yeah, putting pressure
Baku
on himself. Yeah.
Baku destroyed the car, and then once you got to Monaco, that was just poorly strategized by the entire team. Both drivers have made mistakes. Both drivers are quick. You want to make sure that Vettel is quicker because he has the experience. You know, he's done this before. He has four world championships. He's been in F1 for a long time. Charles Leclerc has raw speed, raw talent, but he doesn't have that experience that goes along with it.
Gotcha.
Right? He doesn't have that experience of going like 21 rounds with Lewis Hamilton. You know what I mean? So there's that as well that needs to be taken into consideration. So you always want to make sure that Sebastian Vettel is your horse and he's helping develop your younger horse, who's Charles Leclerc. So all the experience that Vettel has, you need to make sure that he's passing that down to your younger driver, because
Good
he's
point.
Your future, obviously.
Good point. True.
Right. So right now it's Vettel's time to shine, right? Like right now, Vettel's time to win a championship would be in the next 2 years, in my opinion. And then after that, I think Leclerc is going to be the new driver to kind of come in and be the number one guy. So he needs to learn first and foremost. But with Matteo Binotto, so that guy's been put in a little bit of a tough spot, I think, because after Arrivabene was fired. So for those people who are listening who don't know, so these two guys we're talking about, Maurizio Arrivabene, Matteo Binotto, they're kind of like the head coach of the team. And it's their job to make sure everyone's put in the right place. It's their job to make sure the team's running smoothly. And there's also little other things that they do have to do as well, especially managing the drivers is a big part of it. So with these two gentlemen, one of them is let go. Maurizio Arrivabene was let go in the offseason, and Matteo Binotto is promoted. So he's now basically the head coach of Ferrari. This is not a position that he's used to being in. So he's also learning as well. Okay, so it's not an ideal time for Ferrari to go in and start battling Mercedes when you have this not inexperienced crew, but people who are in positions where this is kind of new to them. And eventually it'll get sorted out, but mistakes are going to happen at the beginning. And this is kind of what we're seeing. I think they're going to clean it up. He's going to learn and figure it out. And trust me, by the time July rolls around, this is going to be a different team.
Understood.
Nice.
Yeah, and I think at this point, and hopefully it's not the case, hopefully those fantastic Honda-powered Red Bulls will be able to mix up the field a little bit and continue to compete for podium finishes. But kind of glancing to the middle of the pack, and this is a story that obviously Gil and I, as Canadian viewers, were really excited about last year, which of course was when Lawrence Stroll, John McCaw Jr., they came along, they injected a huge amount of capital into what was previously the Force India team, rebranded as Racing Point in the offseason. Obviously, due to Force India's financial constraints, they weren't necessarily able to get their 2019 car off the ground. So Racing Point was running a little bit behind going into the new season. But we saw a fairly significant package of upgrades in Spain. The teams obviously invested a lot of money around their motorhome and some of the other amenities, which are designed to help the sponsors feel great about the team. But aside maybe from a couple of decent points finishes to begin the season and a decent outing at Baku, the last couple of races, Spain and of course last week in Monaco, have been a challenge. What are your thoughts on the Racing Point team year to date? Are these growing pains? Is it because they're playing catch up? And what are your thoughts on Stroll? I think we've now seen 9 straight instances where he hasn't been able to get out of Q1.
The car they're using this season was made before Lawrence Stroll and the consortium took over Racing Point. So if you go all the way back to July, Nicholas Latifi was in that car at the end of the Hungarian Grand Prix testing that car, in particular with the new front wing and then a little bit of other new bits that they were going to add. So this is kind of last year's sort of chassis with new bits kind of put onto it. They didn't really have the money. Yeah, so they didn't really have the money to really start manufacturing and making a new car for 2019, if that makes any sense, because everything was started all the way back when. So there's that. Obviously, this is the 2019 car, but a big portion of this car was made a long time ago. So what happens at that point is, you know, you have this consortium that comes in, they purchase Force India, they rebrand it as Racing Point. They've hired a ton of new staff, which is great. They've injected a ton of cash into developing their own wind tunnels, into developing bigger R&D labs, into creating new buildings. So they've bought more land. They're now under construction to build a bigger facility to house everything. And what kind of starts to fall through, I wouldn't say fall through the cracks, but basically you've developed this race car and you've got it and you don't want to just go and throw a ton of new cash at it to redevelop it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yep.
In the off season, it's kind of like, okay, we've already got something built. Well, why am I going to go spend another $100 million to rebuild something you guys have already built? So let's just stick with what we got for this season. Let's see what we can do with it. Let's try and get fourth in the Constructors' Championship. And then when 2020 rolls around, we're going to have something that's a little different. It's going to be even more competitive. Then when the rules and regulations, they change in 2021, they'll be ready to attack, because their goal is not really 2019 and 2020. Their goal is 2021.
Yeah, so they're building up to that point.
Exactly. They want to make sure that by the time 2021 hits, they've nailed those regulations. So in October of this year, hopefully, when those regulations get released, that's when they're going to be working on it. That's when their goal is to work from right now up until 2021. So that's kind of the broader picture for Racing Point. Okay. It's not really so much focused on, 2019. It's more along the lines of, hey, where are we going in the future? How are we going to get there? And let's plan for it, because that's the strategy that they're going to take. And in all honesty, that's the right strategy. That's what Mercedes did back when the hybrid engines changed over.
Of course,
that's what,
great call.
Yeah, that's what Red Bull did when they changed over all the aerodynamics during the V8 era. So, I mean, these are smart decisions that they're making. Now, looking at this year's car, some of the issues that we're talking about. So in Spain, they brought a new upgrade for the car. Now, the upgrade, they're still not quite sure if that upgrade is working just yet. But their one issue is in qualifying. And again, it has to come back to the tires and generating heat into the tires and getting them activated. So that's one of the issues that they're having right now. Is their biggest problem is trying to get the tire to work for qualifying. So for the one lap qualifying, is they're trying to figure out how to get heat into the tire so they can activate it for that one lap and get the perfect performance out of it. So that's what they're battling with right now. Once they get to Canada, I heard from Otmar Szafnauer the other day, and he seems to feel that as soon as they get to Canada, they're going to have this sorted out and they're going to be able to get this vehicle qualified a little bit higher. You know, I still think that they can battle for fourth. Some people don't think so. I still think this team can do it for sure. They're not that far off. Lance is a great driver. So is Sergio. It's just a big portion of this is trying to get these tires activated.
So aside,
if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it
hope
does.
Hope I didn't confuse anybody.
No, not at all. Great. Not at all. It makes sense. But aside from the vehicle engineering, let's talk about Lance Stroll. We've mentioned that his father now owns the team. Does that put pressure on him mentally when he goes out there to perform? Or does he keep his name, his father's name, separate from what he's doing on the track? We're just concerned about his performance. We've been hearing a lot of stuff about him getting coaching and working towards a better position.
Yeah, I mean, everybody gets coaching first and foremost. If you're in Formula One, you're getting some kind of coaching from somebody. In terms of his outright performance, I mean, he's had a really up and down season. He hasn't qualified well, and this is something that he and I have spoke about. You know, we've talked about the qualifying and we've talked about how he needs to get it dialed in, and he knows that. So he admits it. He does admit that, hey, you know, qualifying is a bit of a struggle for me right now. It's not something he can't learn, though. You have to remember that he went from Formula 3 into Formula 1. So he missed a big step there with Formula 2. But again, in Formula 2, so for those people who don't know, there's a ladder system for Formula 1, Formula 3, Formula 2, and then you make your arrival into Formula One. You know, lower level sports, it's, you know, with hockey, it's like junior level hockey, and then you go to OHL or CHL or wherever you're going to go, and then you get into NHL. So it's kind of like that. Now for Formula Two, it's a big step because that's where you learn how to work with the tires. That's where you learn how important it is not to overheat, overdrive. You learn how to work with the tire to activate it and to make sure that you're not really destroying the tire. Now, when you get into Formula One, you kind of take those things that you've learned and you transfer them into F1. So for Lance, unfortunately, he missed that step, but in his consideration, he did win a Formula 3 championship. And when Williams comes knocking on your door, you can't really say no. Make sense?
Absolutely.
You can't really,
definitely.
You can't turn down an opportunity in F1 no matter when they come to you. You just don't do that. It's not how this works. You have to go and do it and give it your best and see what happens. So for Lance, obviously his first year I thought was great.
Yeah.
I mean, setting all the records that he set, we're never going to see those broken. In all honesty, I mean, those are records that they're there and they're not going anywhere. So that's impressive for someone who's 18 years old doing all the things that he did. Now coming into this season, you know, again, transferring to a new team is a hard thing because you have to learn a totally new crew. You have to trust this new crew. You're learning a brand new car that you're not used to driving. So if you go back to Williams, so when he was at Williams, 2017, brand new Formula One car, his first, I would say, three races, struggled mightily, but then started to learn and figured it out and basically finished that season only a few points behind his more experienced teammate, Felipe Massa. I think Lance finished 12th and Massa finished 11th in the championship standings. And yeah, we also have to remember Massa almost won a championship in 2008 battling Lewis Hamilton.
Yep.
So
yep. Yeah, that was a great
So this guy's got a lot of pedigree and experience. Okay. And this is his teammate and he almost beat him in his very first year of Formula One. So now you have an understanding of like, okay, this is the Williams car. This is kind of how it drives and how it handles. These are the characteristics. And then Patty Lowe comes in and he rechanges everything and he retools this race car, but it still has some of the old characteristics from the old race car. So your confidence isn't going to be that far down. Obviously, it's not going to do the things that the older car did, but in terms of characteristics, it's still kind of the same. So it doesn't really change too much, and that helps your confidence and it helps you push. Now, you go to a different team, the car has a different set of characteristics, it has a different set of rules, and it has a different way of being driven. And so now you have to relearn everything that you've previously learned. And so that's kind of the stage that Lance is in right now. He has a new team, he has a new set of people around him. This is a brand new car to him, and he's got to figure it out, and he's got to learn. And he's doing a pretty good job, I think, and he just needs to nail that qualifying. And once he gets that, I mean, he's going to be, he's going to be okay. So I know people get frustrated with the qualifying, but his racing is so good. Like, if you guys watch Monaco, did you watch Monaco?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, of course.
So in Monaco, he had a great start, right? How hard is it to pass in Monaco?
Very difficult.
Very hard, yeah. It's tight.
Impossible. Yeah. So he started, what did he start? 16th, I believe it was. And then he, by the opening lap, he had made up two spots and he beat his teammate. So, I mean, the kid can race, right? The guy shouldn't call him a kid anymore. He's like an adult. The guy can race. He's a good racer, which is the most important thing you could have because points are scored on a Sunday. Yes, qualifying is nice, but if you have a driver who's just an outright racer, I mean, that is gold because you can teach them how to qualify, right? That skill is teachable and that just takes time. It's like a jump shot. It's like if you have a basketball player who's like, let's take a look at DeMar DeRozan, crazy, crazy athlete, right? He was a crazy athlete when he came to play for the Raptors and they taught him how to shoot a jump shot. And then he shot a jump shot and now he's a great jump shot shooter, right? Like he can hit some pretty big shots, not outside of 3-point range, but you know, that's coming, I think, for him. But you know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
You're teaching someone a tool. So the same thing with Lance is that this needs to be taught. And when it does get taught and when he does finally learn it, I mean, he'll be fine. His performances will be fine. Everyone always asks me if I'm always worried about Lance. I'm never worried about Lance. Never.
The comments that you made about the tires seem to resonate with me because obviously we were very excited watching his very successful final year in F3 in 2016. And he made the transition to Williams in 2017. And I very specifically recall that one of the challenges that he had over the first couple of races that season were really about grip and learning the tires. Mm-hmm. But that was also a season that had some remarkable highlights for him. I'll never forget, obviously, the podium finish in Baku where he was nipped by Bottas at the very last second but still finished on the podium. And my goodness, I don't even recall when Williams had a podium prior to that. And of course, he qualified exceptionally well in Italy. So there were some really, really remarkable highlights there. So every time I get a little bit discouraged, I just think back to what he was able to do in 2017 with a not so great Williams car. And to your point as well, the fact that he was able to compete head to head with Felipe Massa. And I question as well whether he really got any of the nurturing and support and guidance from Felipe Massa that maybe the team would have hoped for and maybe that he would have hoped for. And I think the two of them have kind of had some sideways comments in the media about that, the dynamic of that relationship since. But I just look back to what he was able to do with what was really a mediocre car in 2017. And obviously last year's car had kind of fallen off of the map. But I think
you're being too nice. You're being too nice.
Oh, my friend, I grew up as a Williams fan. I've been to the Williams factory in Grove. So I try to be very, very political when I talk about this team on air, but yeah, I agree. So I think obviously there's something there, but I think what you've said in terms of the process, the quote unquote Philadelphia 76ers process with Racing Point is that, hey, we're not building and sinking a ton of money into being good this year or next year. We want to align all of our resources. We want to build out our facilities and hire the staff so we can compete for a championship in 2021 when the regulations change.
Yeah, it's kind of like a business, right? So it's just like, you have to remember that obviously, F1 is the sport, but then again, you also have the business side of it. Yeah. And like any sport, there's always going to be a business side of it. I think with a lot of sports, and we can relate this with Formula One, whether it be basketball, baseball, hockey, you know, whatever the sport is and the franchise is that you need to make sure that your internal is strong. So you want to make sure internally, businessly, you're very strong. You have the people working in the places that they should be working in. You're promoting when you should be promoting, and you're putting people in positions of power that suits them. So for a business, you know, that's kind of what you want to do, and then build outwards. So you're going to start building out, and then, you know, your last focus is kind of making sure that you have the talent, and then making sure that you're putting out a really great product. And so for, you know, I always use basketball because one, I love basketball, and two, it's easier to understand. Where it's with basketball teams, if you look at the San Antonio Spurs, they're strong. Their head office is so strong, right? Like they develop their players properly. Their talent scouting is amazing. Their coaching is outstanding. And then their head office is amazing in ways of trying to keep the business alive. And then that transfers everything out onto the court. And that's what we see. You know, San Antonio, the Spurs are, you know, they've been in the playoffs for, I mean, I'm not too sure what their run is, but for the last, 10, 12 years, they've been in the playoffs like every year. So they're starting from the middle, which is the business, and then building outwards. And the same thing needs to be done with Formula One. You need to make sure that the people at the factory, the crew, everyone you're hiring and putting in this position is strong and is good at what they do, and then you build outwards. So that's why you see Mercedes is so strong, and that's why you always hear Lewis Hamilton like complimenting the team, because it's a team sport, but at the same time, it's
great
like
call.
It's like everybody at Mercedes is doing their job, and their one goal is to win, and that is it. And so, I mean, the same thing is going to happen with Racing Point. I mean, the Strolls, this isn't Lawrence's Strolls, first walk through a business, right? Like this guy builds business. He builds businesses, so he knows what he's doing. And you just have to trust, like you said, trust the process.
Tim, you spoke earlier about going through the steps or the levels in the Formula Series. I just want to get your thoughts on Nicholas Latifi. You know, with him in Formula 2, does he go for the championship, or does he make a move if the seat's available for him at Williams?
And I'll just add to that, too. One of the debates that the two of us have constantly is exactly that. And your point about, look, if you have the opportunity to jump into a Formula 1 car, you do it. But, you know, you have obviously more perspective and insight. But for me and Gil, our conversation's always been like, look, do you drive after that F2 championship, and do you get that on your resume, or do you jump into, say, as an example, a Williams car, knowing that, hey, it's not going to be a super competitive car, and maybe that doesn't do a lot for my career? Your thoughts around Latifi and what he should do if an opportunity became available?
To answer your first part of your question, I don't think he can jump into an F1 car this season to go and race, because he doesn't have the super points license. So he needs to finish in the top five this season to get that license to be able to race in F1 for 2020.
Gotcha.
So he can't just go and pick himself up and throw himself into a Williams car for this season. Not unless some sort of like special exemplary thing that takes place that allows him to do that, which I've never heard of the FIA doing something like that before. And I really highly doubt they would do it for this season as well. And I think for Nicholas, I think his main focus is, you know, everyone always asks him, you know, hey, you should be in Formula One right now. You know, would you go into Formula One right now? And it's just like, he always says, look, you know, the championship is the goal, and it is the goal, and it should be the goal. Winning this Formula 2 championship is something he's worked at for, you know, 3-4 years. Like, this isn't, you know, this isn't like a game to him. Like he really wants this. This championship to him means a lot. And I think if he gets this championship, I think if he wins it, then I think that opens up so many possibilities for him to get into Formula One, and in particular into Williams for sure. Now, that's an exciting thing to have. But for Nicholas, I think, you know, you just need to try and stay focused on the moment, and need to try and stay focused on this championship. I think he does a really good job of that, in all honesty. I mean, he could really let a lot of what people say to him get to him. But I think for him, he's so strong mentally, and he's able to kind of block all of that talk out. And he does such a good job of just focusing on what he has to do, the task at hand, and going and getting it. You know, I think he's one of those drivers of the future to really look out for.
Yeah, and when we interviewed him, he was very passionate about winning the championship and working with his F2 team. So, yeah, that's what we want from him as well. We want him to finish out F2, win the championship, and then put himself in a better position for Formula One or for any other opportunities that come up.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, his journey is a little different from some of the other drivers' journeys, where he started, I don't want to say he started late. I mean, sometimes he says that he started late. I don't agree with that. I mean, like, I started when I was like 9, and some of these kids are starting when they're 5. And it's like, if you started when, like, he started when he was 14, right? It's a 3-year difference, or 4 year, or whatever, 5-year difference from me to him in terms of starting ages. I'm like, geez, like, come on, man. Like, it's not that bad.
Totally.
I think he's just a naturally gifted athlete. And I think, especially when it comes to, you know, the racing, he gets to it. He takes to it very naturally. He's super quick too. And I'm really excited to see where his career goes. And I'm really excited to see what happens with this Formula 2 championship, because it's definitely going to be exciting. I mean, he leads the championship right now by just 1 point, right? So definitely going to be an exciting championship to watch.
Absolutely. And for us as well, it's been incredibly awesome to have this dynamic where you have a Canadian driver in Formula One with a team that's building and expanding its capabilities, but you also have a second Canadian driver who's on the cusp of potentially winning or at least competing for an F2 championship and could be in a Formula One seat next year. Like, the prospect of having potentially two Canadians on the grid for us is just incredibly exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Which again makes our efforts here and our mandate to kind of grow the sport in Canada and just make it more accessible. Like, we're not an overly technical show, and I love everything that you've done so far, which is, hey, you know what, for listeners that may not be familiar, this is why this and this and this happens. We never want to assume too much of our listeners, because like us, they're probably not as familiar as somebody who grew up watching the sport in Europe or parts of Asia. We don't want to keep you a lot longer, because you've been incredibly...
Out of respect for your time, good. I think we just have like a couple of questions.
Sure.
We just wanted to just...
Yeah, man.
I wanted to ask Tim with regards to his thoughts on the 2020, the new tracks for 2020.
Oh, yeah.
Vietnam and Holland.
Right, Zandvoort. Yeah. Those are... I'm interested, actually, to see the Vietnam track. Everyone keeps, like... Not everyone, but there's a lot of negative stuff that I've seen out there with people written on it. And I'm just like, give it a chance first.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's go there and see what happens.
Yeah.
Let's go, right? Like, let's just see what happens, because you don't know. It's kind of like Azerbaijan, where when that was first announced, a lot of people were writing and just crushing.
Yeah.
And now we see it. It's one of the best races on the calendar.
No question. No question. I honestly don't know that there's an event I get more excited about. And we talked a lot about, maybe it's just the backdrop or the setting or the flame towers or running along the wall. Like, it's a beautiful setting.
Yeah. All of it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And if they can replicate some of that in Vietnam, all the better for the sport. So I think we're both pretty excited about Vietnam. We're excited
it's a mixed
for Zandvoort.
Bag Vietnam, where we took a look at the topographical view of how they looked like they were going to lay out the track. And it's a mixed bag, where you've got part of it looking like in an industrial area and going into the city. So really excited to see how that's going to play out.
I mean, the thing with making like an F1 race, it's, and I was talking to a friend of mine who lives in New York, and he goes to a lot of Formula E races when they come to New York, and is trying to find where you can where you can put it, because I mean, IndyCar coming to a spot in the city is one thing, and it's pretty big. F1 coming to your city is like it's a totally new ball game.
Yeah.
The tracks are huge, and you need to have an infrastructure that's going to support, like, you know, over 100,000 people coming on site, right? And that's not including the staff, and that's not including the teams and the crew and the workers and the drivers. So it's trying to find some place to house an F1 race is not easy. Looking at Miami and what they were going to try and do there, I know Lewis Hamilton, it was Hamilton who had said that, like, he wasn't too thrilled by the way the track actually looked. But, you have to take into consideration of, like, hey, we need to try and bring these races to the people. And by doing that, we need to find places to put these things, right? Yeah. So it's a really, really difficult thing to do. And I think the Vietnam race looks very interesting. Zandvoort is going to be sick because that's like an old school racetrack.
Yeah.
And that's one of those racetracks they're going to need to do a bit of work on, for safety. Yeah.
It looks amazing. But, looks great.
Yeah, these cars, I think that's going to be one of those tracks where it has that old school feeling where, if you make a mistake, it's going to cost you, kind of thing. So I'm excited. Yeah.
We got a little bit carried away with the Miami thing. And it's funny because for the exact reasons that you're talking about, we were dreaming of this street track in downtown Miami, going over the causeway past the Miami Heats Arena. And ultimately it looks like the race promoter realized that logistically this just isn't possible.
They're looking at maybe holding
something in the parking lot next to the Miami Dolphins stadium. But for that exact reason, like, logistically, this is a beast, and all the praise to places like Monaco that can assemble this, or even Australia that assemble these largely street-based courses. But at the same time, I think we're also sad, although Spain doesn't make for a great race sometimes, they're very passionate fans, and it's incredibly sad to potentially see them dropping off the calendar. And likewise, I think we're looking to see Mexico drop off as well, as the federal government's no longer willing to subsidize it. But that's a race that I also found incredibly exciting, and it's going to be sad to see that one go as well.
Yeah, they're going to have to figure out a way to keep Mexico. That can't happen. You can't lose a race like that. I mean, they're getting they're getting over 200,000 people going to that race on race day.
Yeah,
that's a huge event. You can't lose that. Like, you cannot lose Mexico.
Yeah.
I mean,
especially
you need
for Mexico and for the F1 sport.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So, I mean, Liberty Media, F1, like, they know that. They know how important Mexico is, and I'm sure I don't see this race going anywhere. I really don't. I think it's too important. It's too important to the country.
Great.
It brings in a ton of money. Yeah. I mean, they have to figure it out, and I'm sure they will.
It makes me feel very good to hear you say that, because, again, it's one of those races that I think we enjoy, and whether it's either the hairpin corners going through the baseball stadium, or just the fact that the city just embraces the event as the world-class event that it is, I think you're right. And I think from a Liberty Media perspective, and I'm sure you agree, I think a lot of the things they've done since they took over ownership and stewardship of the sport have been really good. They've made it far more accessible from a social media perspective. They've done a great job with the rebranding, either the logo or, to your earlier point, just about the introduction or the theme music that kicks off each event. But Liberty Media, do you think they're headed in the right direction in terms of growing awareness of the sport and helping to grow the young fan base?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think they've done, how long have you guys been watching F1 for? Like, quite a long time.
I've been watching
it since, probably.
Yeah, mid-90s for me, early mid-90s, 95.
So you've seen the development of the sport online. Obviously, in the past, I would say 3 years, right? Like, you have to take into consideration where they started from. Not going to knock Bernie Ecclestone, because what that man did was one of the most impressive things in sports, like, in business-wise, to build the business. I mean, the man was a genius. But once social media, really, I would say, started to becoming a big thing. For Bernie, it was more along the lines of, hey, I don't want to put my stuff out there for free if I'm not going to make any money off of it. Where Liberty Media's mindset is, we need to put this stuff out there we can grow it even more. Like, we're already a juggernaut. We want to be bigger than that. So how do we do that?
Yeah.
So their strategy for growing the sport, I think, is awesome.
Yeah.
They have invested so much money into promoting their business of Formula One, of bringing it to the people, of making sure the fans are happy, making sure that there's a lot that fans can do when they go to racetracks now.
Absolutely.
Because in the past at F1 races, you know, there wasn't much really to do. You know, there wasn't any real concerts. You know, there wasn't a lot of partying. You know, there wasn't, you know, go-kart tracks set up anywhere. You know, now it's, you know, they've turned these world-class events into world-class events with huge parties, right, for the fans and stuff for kids to do. And it's very inviting for people now to, if they know nothing about Formula One, you're still going to come to the F1 race and you're going to have a good time. Even if you're not a huge fan of F1, there's still going to be something Absolutely. There for you to Yep. do. Right? I mean, you look at like the US Grand Prix at COTA, that's genius.
Yeah.
Where they bring everyone to the circuit, you buy your tickets, and then you hold on to your ticket and you can go and see, you know, whoever the big music stars are playing at night. I mean, that's brilliant, right? And the way they get people to the track, they use buses, there's loading zones for everybody downtown from in Austin, and then they bring you all out to the track, and the buses are always running, so you're never not having to stay in one place at any one time. I mean, they've done a great job, I think you can notice it. I think you can notice it, especially on social media as well.
Yeah, accessibility to the sport is key, I think. You know, that way...
Yeah, like, what do you guys think? Because, I mean, again, right, like, you've been watching the sport since the 90s, and now to see where it's come and where it is now, and over the past 3 years, what have you noticed?
Yes, definitely,
changed?
Because there's always been that prestige with Formula One being a very rich sport, a very, you know, high-end sport, and being out of reach to a lot of regular folk, let's say.
But that was almost Bernie's strategy. And it's funny because I kind of make this baseball comparison. But if you looked at the sport, and Bernie's made comments about this, and again, to your earlier point, the sport exists because of Bernie's genius early on. But like if your primary marketing partners are companies like Rolex, you know that at the end of the day, his demo, the only demo he cares about is that plus 50 affluent crowd, where really, if you want this sport to have a sustainable future and continued growth, you need to be targeting at a younger audience. And you can't do that if you don't have a social media presence. And I think one of the things I find most impressive is the amount of content that Formula One puts on YouTube. So if you miss free practice, you can log into YouTube and they'll have the highlights up within minutes. You miss qualifying, it's on there. Interviews, like the amount and the richness of content that they make available to everybody on YouTube is really impressive. So I would agree that they're making unbelievable strides.
Yeah, accessibility is the key, definitely, both in social media and both on the track or on race events.
Yeah, the YouTube stuff is what really gets me. I mean, I think their YouTube producers are out of this world good, because it's like as soon as stuff ends, there is so much content that they've put up. And it's like, it's like you said, you know, if you miss something, it's going to be there. And it's crazy because, you know, if you go to maybe other websites, they're going to do things a little differently and you might not see everything. But with F1, they put everything in it. Yeah. They jam pack those highlights. Some of them times are 6 minutes long because it requires that to get all of the important things that happened into those highlights that they've created. So, yeah, I think their YouTube channel is unbelievable. I think their YouTube crew I think that's genius. I think that was genius to create that little department.
That's amazing. And I think we completely agree. And I think that's what we find most exciting. And I make that baseball analogy because, you know, when I'm watching a baseball game, especially a Toronto Blue Jays game, I feel like 90% of the commercials are for lawn seed and lawn fertilizer and lawn tractors. And like, I just know who their target audience is, but I'm also a gigantic NBA fan. And when I watch that sport and I look at their marketing partners, it's shoe companies, it's beverage companies, it's restaurants. Like, you know that they have this healthy, sustainable demo that they're going after. And I feel more and more that that's where Formula One is shifting. So hopefully they can kind of make inroads with the youth in North America.
Well, I think they will. It's just going to, here's the thing that I always, you know, it's interesting. I want to go back to the YouTube thing real quick because I forgot to tell you the story. So I'd done an interview and this was a couple months ago, I'd done an interview for a kid who is in journalism school at, I believe it was Humber College. And he was just starting to get into Formula One. And I had asked him, well, look, hey, you know, like, how did you come into F1? And he said, this is my second year following the sport. He's like, the only reason I got into it was because I was on YouTube.
Wow.
And I saw the highlights. He's like, I watched one highlight pack and he's like, I was addicted and that was it. And now I've watched everything since.
Unreal.
He says he consumes. Yeah, he's now a hardcore F1 fan. But that's the power, I think, that they've noticed with YouTube and their highlights. Now, going back to...
By extension, even... So we work in a big corporate office. We work in a building with almost 1,000 people.
And I know you're going with this.
The impact that Netflix's
thing.
Drive to Survive had in our office with people that would never even have imagined going to find a highlight or to learn about the sport. People were talking about it, and the buzz, without even us
really
enabling them, was crazy. So we had people talking about it, like, oh, my boyfriend's on the edge. He's been watching every episode. Or me and my girlfriend binged the whole thing on the weekend. We're like, how did you get into it? Like, the strategy to partner up with Netflix and produce that was unbelievable.
Yeah, and the same people who produced it are the ones who did the documentary Senna.
Wow. Oh,
so if you guys have ever seen that documentary before, I mean, I had this argument with, I'm trying to remember who it was. I was interviewing somebody and we were discussing this. It might've been Brian Tyler. I can't remember who it was. We were talking about Senna. Oh no, I know who it was. It was Stephen King over at, this guy works in the movie industry as well, and he's a huge racing fan. And him and I were talking about Senna and how great it was and everything, and just how it should have been nominated for an Oscar. And then I kind of came to learn that it's like if a lot of the footage was shot and it was really old and they pieced it together as a movie, then they can't really nominate that as an Oscar. And that's basically a roundabout way of the story. But those people who created that, they're the ones who are responsible for this Netflix series.
Unreal.
And I think, yeah, that's a great choice because they've hit a home run with that one.
Absolutely.
For sure. I think, and then we were talking about what? North America.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, like growing, I mean, for F1 to get big in North America, there's always been that argument, and I hear it all the time, that it's, oh, hey, this sport is never going to be big in this country until there's a countryman in it. And I always say, bull crap. If you have the stories, and it doesn't even matter where they're from, if you've got stories, you're good to go, right? People love a good story, and that's what sells your content to other people, is stories. So if you've got a great story, and I mean, and you've got a countryman that's involved, even better. But if you've just got a great story, then that right there is how you're going to sell your product.
Absolutely.
Or your brand or whatever it is. So, I mean, that in itself is huge. With F1, you've got a ton of those stories. With Netflix, you've done an amazing job of executing all of those stories and getting them out to people. I think it's just going to take some time, but I already think it's growing in North America. In Canada, it's huge. You have to remember, we all seem to think that F1 is this niche sport in Canada now. Wrong. F1 is freaking huge in Canada. The Canadian
awesome.
Grand Prix is practically already almost sold out. Like, you know how many people that is? That's, you know, you're looking at well over 150,000 people on one spot at one time.
Yeah.
That's the biggest sporting event in Canada. Like, you're telling me that that's a niche sport? Get out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Netflix did a great job of showing us the behind the scenes in Formula One, not just watching the race on TV, but bringing us into the pits, bringing us into the mindset of the team and the drivers and the technology. And yeah, it's really interesting.
It's access that we never would have had with Bernie.
Not just
it's
us,
access
everybody,
that Liberty's bringing
everybody,
us. Yeah.
Just the masses. So
yeah, for sure.
So Tim, just, you know, in respects to your time and just in closing, we have just like one question for you, just to kind of end this off. And, you know, based on where you work and what you do, do you have any advice for Mark and I on doing this Young Canadian podcast?
In all honesty, guys, like, I'm still trying to figure out my podcast and how to like... and how to, you know, finding different ways of of getting it out there and finding different ways of making it relevant and getting people to consume it. And, you know, as hard as I try, you know, it's just, I might never stop working on it. So for you guys, it's the same thing. Just don't, I mean, you're going to get discouraged and you're going to have people who are going to tell you that your whatever your sport is dumb or it doesn't make sense or it's not a sport, or you're going to get so much stuff. The main thing is not to get discouraged. Like that's the main key. You can't give up either. So that's the other my other piece of advice is just don't ever give up and don't ever stop trying different things, because you always want to make sure that you're ticking all the boxes. Where did I try this? Did I try that? Did I try that? Did I try that? Did I try this? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And just keep building it and keep growing it, growing the brand, because it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of passion, but you have to understand that hopefully that it pays off. At the end of the day, you want to be making sure that you're doing this because you love to do it. I mean, that's a big thing with me and what I've learned in my life and through my career and all of the struggles and the hardships and all the crap I had to go through is just that if I don't like something, I'm not going to do it, is basically how I operate. If I am passionate about something and I love it, you know, I'll work my butt off for it because I believe in it. So same thing has to go for you guys, because it's a hard slog.
Yeah, Mark and I are definitely passionate about Formula One, and he approached me this year about doing this podcast, and we've definitely learned a lot in doing our first podcast to now 10, 11 podcasts later. And we're still young and early, and you know, we've been very fortunate to get interviews and talk to people such as yourself, and this, you know, with this amazing start to the season with Mercedes, and just some of the stuff that Mark and I talk about, you know, off air, in the office. This is kind of how, you know, we got to doing this, is talking about our passion at work, you know, having our water cooler conversations every Monday. We're like, you know what, let's just share this. And Mark had that great idea. I was going to do a YouTube channel on making waffles and just eating it in front of a camera. And Mark just calls me up on a Sunday, and in my mind, I'm like, he must be serious. He's calling me on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Which he never does, and wants to do this podcast.
And really, it was just about sharing our enthusiasm for the sport. It was never about even for a second monetizing this. It was just like, hey, if we can help kind of spread our enthusiasm and get more young Canadians interested in the sport, that's all we wanted to do.
Yeah, and we've been very lucky to have like Nicholas Latifi, you know, come on as a Canadian. We want to support all the Canadian athletes and drivers out there in the sport. For you to follow us on Instagram and to agree to come on and talk to us is very exciting to us. Again, we're very new at this, and you know, to be able to have the opportunities to meet people such as yourself is really great for Mark and I.
So Tim, if our listeners wanted to follow you, what's the best way? I believe you are on Instagram. You do a ton of content there. You're on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, for Instagram, like I do a lot of contest giveaways. Like companies give me things, and so I give them away on Instagram. And so I do a lot of that there. I do a lot of, if I work for a car company and I create videos, there's video content of cars that I do. I do that on my Instagram. Same thing with like if there's a big F1 story that I was able to break, or if that's important to me or it's important to Canada, then I'll put that on my Instagram. Awesome. But most of the break, when I break news, when I have a story or something big coming out, especially with my podcast and all that stuff, I use my Twitter. People want to follow me, it's at Tim Haraney on Twitter and Instagram. It's Haraney. It's how you spell my last name. But yeah, I just want to thank you guys for having me on. It's really awesome to see that there's other people out there who are creating F1 content in Canada and racing content in general. So I think that's awesome. And just want to tell you guys just to keep at it, because it's hard, but at the end of the day, it's definitely worth it.
Man, I couldn't appreciate those kind words anymore. Yeah. And like I said, we're huge fans, and to have you on was incredibly meaningful. Maybe one last thought before we let you go, but Raptors NBA Finals. I'm going absolutely crazy. My wife and I managed to mortgage our house and we'll be at game five. So if you're there, hopefully I could say hi, but just your thoughts on the NBA Finals. And Toronto must be just going, Toronto must be going crazy right now.
Oh, it's crazy here. Like it's so busy. I mean, I was trying to leave the city because I was going up to TSN to do some voice work yesterday, and I was trying to leave the city, and it was around 3 o'clock, and there was traffic jam everywhere. I couldn't, it took me so long to get out of the city. It was crazy how many people were coming in and out of the city yesterday. So I think it's great for Toronto. I think it's great for Canada. Everyone's always like, oh, Toronto team. This is Canada's team. You know, I go out to, my girlfriend lives in Vancouver, so I go out and see her all the time. And whenever I go out there, I see people wearing Raptors gear. I see people wearing old Grizzlies gear, which is sick. And so I still think Canada's becoming a basketball country, which is awesome. It's kind of like, I look at it the same way as F1, right? Where it's like building racing, not only just F1, but IndyCar, NASCAR, all of it. IMSA, like building racing in Canada has taken a while, but it's starting to come back around, I think. And the thing with basketball is kind of like, hey, you know, they've started at ground zero and now look at where they are. I mean, it's so great to see. It just sucks that the tickets are so expensive.
Totally.
They're like 20 grand.
I won't tell you what we spent, but it was an absurd amount.
I go to quite a few Raptors games. This year, I haven't gone to as many because the tickets have been so expensive. So I went to about 3 games this year, and I spent $500. Well, that was the most I spent on one ticket to sit. And I got pretty close to the court, like with my girlfriend and I. And so that was a great experience. That was the last time I was there. So that was back in January. So I was, no, sorry, February is the last time I was at a game. So, I mean, I'm a hardcore fan, but there's only so far I'm going to go with spending that amount of money. You know what I mean?
With NHL and hockey being such a dominant sport here in Canada, you know, I know Vancouver's trying to get some big basketball events and trying to show and, you know, the Raptors, the NBA Finals. I think Vancouver is just a bit gun shy right now.
I would consider myself a Vancouver Grizzlies historian, so don't get me started. I have a closet full of game worn and authentic Grizzlies merchandise. But
that's awesome.
But yeah, I agree, and I think Canada is going to embrace this team for the finals. Tim, thank you so much. You've given us an incredible amount of your time. Hopefully, we can do this one day again in the future, maybe in the off season to kind of recap the year. But we really appreciate your time. Good luck this week, and I think we're all looking forward to a great race in Canada.
And the offer's on the table. It's gonna be awesome. If you're ever in Vancouver visiting your girlfriend, Mark and I would love to take you out for a beer or something.
Yeah, so.
Sure.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, for sure, guys. I'm probably going to be out there, I think, towards the end of... She's coming here for the next couple months, but I think I might be out there at the end of... I may be out there at the end of August or in September, but I'll be there. Usually I stay for a couple months in the wintertime.
Awesome.
I usually stay around December and January. I stay in Vancouver for a few months. So yeah, I mean, just let me know, guys. I'm around.
That'd be great.
For sure.
Love it.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Search for Flash F1 Official.
Okay, so I think that's it. Anything else?
No, that's it. So I just want to say thank you for listening to Flash F1. Come back for more tech talk, track talk, team talk, and definitely more trash talk. This is Gil and Mark saying peace.
Peace.
Thanks everyone for joining us. You have been a great audience. This is Sarah signing off at Flash F1 with Gil and Mark.